Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from 970 ESPN and Steelers Nation Radio, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves chilling, talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave. He's Dave Bryan of SteelersDepot.com, the place to get your latest and greatest Steelers information. And I'm David Todd of ESPN Pittsburgh and the Steelers Radio Network. And the Steelers are now 6-4, Dave. A third straight sun-splashed 1 o'clock game at Heinz Field. The Steelers end up taking 2 of 3. They roll to a comfortable 30-9 win over the Cleveland Browns. But certainly the story of the game was the pregame decision by Mike Tomlin to dress Ben Roethlisberger, but start Landry Jones. And let's start our conversation there with what were your thoughts at the time? I mean, you and I have discussed this many times on the show, and I think, you know, our opinion is based on what Mike Tomlin has said in the past, that if you're not good enough to start, there's no point in dressing you because you don't want to put you at risk, you being pretty much anybody, but most specifically the quarterback position, put you at risk to have to go in the game if you're not, you know, healthy enough to maybe protect yourself and help the team. But that all flipped yesterday.
Yeah, like I said several times when we talked about Ben, nothing ever surprises me, with how things may or may not go with him. Tomlin said after the game that Roethlisberger perked up later on in the week. Now, obviously, to hear the players talk and, of course, to read the injury report, he was only limited on two of those days and, of course, had to be fitted with that special shoe. And you know, it really didn't look like or sound like that he was going to dress for the game. In fact, I think Mike Vick said on Friday that he was going to be the number two. Now, how much of a ruse, you know, gamemanship that was, we don't know. Britt McHenry.
Yep.
She's the one that broke the news actually late Saturday night, and I missed it. And then of course it resurfaced early Sunday morning that Roethlisberger would indeed, or was, you know, the schedule was for him to dress as the number two and for Landry to start. I you know, at that point I started thinking to myself, oh, you know Ben's just going to be badgering the heck out of him to start. And I understand where you're going with this. You know, if he was healthy enough to dress, well, then he's healthy enough to start, right?
I would have assumed.
So, did you question the decision?
Sure. I said on Twitter, I said, what happens if Landry Jones gets hurt? I literally said, what happens if Landry Jones gets hurt in the first quarter and you've got to go with Ben the rest of the way? And look, Mike has a lot more information than we do. And maybe it was kind of a coin flip as to whether he would start or not. And maybe, you know, Mike, I think the way he talked about it, if I read the comments post game correctly, was, you know, he didn't get the practice reps, which is why he didn't start. It wasn't as much, you know, the physical thing. It's he didn't. Now, I mean, I think you can make a very easy argument that Ben doesn't need the practice reps, and we obviously saw that that's probably reasonably true as he came in and did an unbelievable job. So, you know, I guess, Dave, one of the things in thinking about this that I would just ask the question is, how important is practice during the week? We know guys don't hit, and you're putting in schemes. We know Ben knows the playbook. We know Ben, you know, I can't imagine anything's too new to him. He can watch the film during the course of the week, so that's not inhibiting him in any way. How important is practice? Maybe that's something that we should get into a little bit. And how important is it for different positions and different players? I mean, obviously for the young guys who are new, first-year, second-year guys, it's going to be much more significant. But you got to think for a guy like Antonio Brown, Ben Roethlisberger, Cam Hayward, pick your guy, veteran guys, practice is not all that important, right?
Man, we talk about practice.
Practice, man.
Practice. Not a game. Practice.
By the way, I think I'm sure many people say this now, but I got to watch that live. That was in the day in New York when I was kind of working for myself for a while. I was watching that live, and it was you knew at the time that it was as big as it was going to be, because you'd obviously sitting there going, "This is unbelievable."
You know, good old Al. How many years ago was that?
Oh, at least 10.
Oh, it's been more than that, right?
Yeah. 10, 12.
I don't know. We'll have to put our research, the terrible podcast research department.
I think early 2000s is what I would guess.
You know, with Ben, you know, I think, and look, I like the way Tomlin talked about it after the game. You know, he said we knew we would have Ben available to us probably in a limited capacity from a preparedness standpoint. We operated out of the no huddle a little bit, brought the game to him. It was less game plan specific and more football 101, and we were able to operate in that fashion. I think you could cut that out and frame it, because that's just put Ben in there. Let Ben do what he feels he can do. And, you know, they probably had to do a rush job on maybe some hand signals. And what was the audible? Black butter?
I did not hear that one.
Oh, how could you not? Shame on you. He used black butter a lot during that game. You know what, David, speaking of that, I just wish, you know, they ought to put the boom mics out there, and you ought to be able to get an enhanced, you ought to be able to pay like $9.95 a year to get enhanced boom audio. In fact, one point he says, what did he say? Calling out Patel, he said, black butter, we got to go. Work it out or something like that. It's a great clip. It's something with the Fernando Velasco, Ben Roethlisberger conversation, saying, we gotta go, Nando, gotta go, type conversation. But, you know, in short, I think that's what it boils down to. You know, you put him out there in no huddle, you put him out there in a shotgun, you basically let Ben be the offensive coordinator. And I think that's what you saw in that instance. And I think that's why. Now, do you want to make a habit out of Ben getting an easy paycheck during the week? Probably not. But, look, I mean, let's face it. It, hindsight's always 20/20, but it was the right decision now, right?
Oh, sure, it's the right decision. I mean, look, I mean, the couple things it tells you is level of confidence in Michael Vick, zero.
Less than zero. 0.0.
You know, goes back to my question from 3 weeks ago, why is he on the team? But, you know, at this point, are you going to be able to get anybody up to speed and blah, blah, blah? Hopefully it's not relevant. But, you know, very well may be relevant, because if Landry Jones, you know, he's having an MRI on that ankle today, and we assume it's not busted or whatever. But, if he comes back with, you know, a high ankle sprain or something that's going to keep him out 4 weeks, Mike Vick's your backup again.
Yeah, but I mean, I don't think
they're going to make a change. I'm just saying, Mike Vick very well may be the backup in 2 weeks.
Could be. Well, most definitely. I mean, we'll cross that bridge. You know,
you know,
he did say.
I'll tell you what I thought was funny. Was I said this from the second he went in the game. It was the second he went in the game and looked, you know, completed that little drag, the short, shallow cross to Antonio Brown for 16 yards for a first down, and then looked good from there. You know, the first two passes weren't great. Missed AB deep and then threw one into the back of a defender. And then he was, you know, fantastic from there. But after that first drive, he went down the field. I said, there is no chance Landry Jones going back in. This is Ben Roethlisberger's game. Once he's in the game, it's his game. And all the guys were saying, you know, Landry Jones is throwing a football on the sideline. He's got his helmet on. Like, he's coming back in. I said, nope. No, he is not coming back in. It's Ben's game.
Wait. Well, you know, in the 80s, once you ripped the cellophane off the CD, you couldn't take it back. David.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, so that's kind of – and I'm with you. You knew at that point. You knew it was his game at that point. And I wonder, too, you know, Ben will always say that he still gets nervous before games, you know, and you always see him down there in the tunnel – throwing before games, and you know, we don't know what level, and can't put a meter on any type of that thing. I almost wonder if it didn't help him even more to not really have any maybe pregame jitters, and then just kind of work off of the adrenaline, you know, and get into the game and just, okay, here we are, go.
Yeah,
you know,
I have trouble buying that one too much. I mean, he's 12 years in the league. I assume that, you know, he's, you know, hey, look, he's had great games, he's had bad games. But certainly It's interesting that, you know, since coming back from that initial injury, he has got, you know, he was better this week than he was last week. He was better last week than he was the first week. So, you know, whatever it is, being in rhythm or, you know, just getting out there on a weekly basis, he has certainly improved. And you know, what would you give him? Would you give him, A+? I mean, he was, 22 of 32 for 367. He had 140 or 150 yards of pass interference calls. I think if you added the pass interference calls to the yardage, he had 520 yards of offense with the pass interference. I mean, the only thing that was bad is the red zone offense wasn't great, and that's because, really there was no threat of the run down by the goal line. But, I mean, he was excellent.
Yeah, he was. I don't think he can really have much of a negative outside of, you know, to say about it outside of the red zone stuff, you know, based on everything. I mean, look, I mean, it's like Superman ripping off, like Ramon Foster said, like, you know, just ripped off the clothes and the cape and everything was right up underneath there. 22 of 33, 379 yards. In the second half, he made a couple of bad throws. He was picked off once. I mean,
that was bad.
Yeah,
I'll tell you, the play that I thought was a really bad play call was the fourth and a foot at the goal line. And, you know, they were in shotgun both times. I don't mind spreading them out. I just didn't really understand it. I don't even know if you call it a fade or, you know, just a corner or I don't know what it was, but he missed them badly and just seemed like that was a high risk play in a low risk situation, you know?
Yeah, low percentage, yeah. Type play. And let's talk about that play. I personally thought they should have gone up two touchdowns and kicked a field goal there.
Yeah, I was saying go for it. So, as I generally look, I mean, I think most people know is I'm almost always going to say go for it, and I was a go for it there. I guess if I were looking back at my own question, would I still say go for it if I knew there was zero chance they could run the ball? I think I would. I mean, we saw him convert with AB down there. We've seen him convert so many times on the 2-point conversions. I didn't like the play call, to be honest. That was all.
Yeah, I would have kicked. I would live in my fears, and knowing what you're up against, I think that kind of would have played into my mind and making sure because the Browns are going to get the ball first in the second half. I absolutely want to make sure that I come away with some points. I want to go up two scores, you know, two touchdowns in that scene, because it would have been 17-3, right?
Yep.
So I would have kicked there. And now, obviously, it worked out in their favor, and how. But as far as game management goes, personally, I would have kicked there.
Okay.
But of course, that's why I blog.
Well, look, I mean, these are not 100% and 0% black white answers. I mean, that is one of the things. Anytime you do it in that situation, if there's not, as long as there's not 3 seconds left. You with all your timeouts, you do have an opportunity to get the ball. So even if they're, you know, halfway through the first quarter, if you do make a good stand, you can get field position. And they made it look ridiculously easy on those two plays. I mean, it was, I'm trying to remember exactly what the first pass was. Was that AD over the middle or?
Which one?
They got the ball back after the punt. They get about 20 yards, and then, you know, Martavis Bryant's running running about as free as Amari Cooper was last weekend, it felt like, on that post for the touchdown. But what was the play before the touchdown?
Yeah, that was a pass deep down the middle to Antonio Brown.
Yeah, I mean, you know,
for 20.
Two plays, what was it, you know, 50 yards basically. I mean,
52 yards.
It's just doesn't get any easier than that. And obviously, and you know, people will point to last year's game and say, well, the game wasn't over because I think the Steelers were up 24-3 or 27-3 last year and had to win it with a late field goal. But it felt like that was over. And, you know, the Browns had opportunities. First of all, Antonio Brown, anything to add? I mean, he was spectacular again. Nobody wants him doing a flip like that, but it was an unbelievable flip, I'll tell you that. That was
you can do that, right, David?
On a trampoline and somebody spotting me, maybe. I mean, that was just ridiculous athleticism. And, you know, we hear that Ben has to tell these guys, and apparently he did to Antonio Brown, like, you know, let's throw that out. So he's had to say it to Martavis. He's had to say it to Le'Veon Bell. He's had to say it to Antonio. I mean, you know, whatever. These guys are going to do what they're going to do. It just is.
Yeah,
what,
but save it for the game-winning touchdown in the Super Bowl, so you have time to
to recover.
But you know, early on in that game, as soon as Ben got in there, it kind of felt like, oh man, this guy just caught all these balls last week. You know,
he's going to catch more.
He's going to catch 20.
I said he's going to catch more than he did last week. I mean, and there was a point there where it felt like it. I think he caught the first two balls of the second half, and that would put him at like 6 or 7. And I was just like, you know, 17 is not out of the question.
You know, targeted what, 14 times, 10 receptions, 139. Obviously, the long he had just. I mean, it sounds like a broken record. Just out. You got to get, and that's one thing the other quarterbacks really weren't able to do. Well, you know, Landry Jones obviously did it against the Raiders, but one thing Mike Vick certainly couldn't do is get the ball to Antonio out in space, because that guy is a yak machine. You know,
was Cleveland in cover zero? How did they catch him on the safeties on the last touchdown? Where were the safeties?
I don't think you could see that, and the all 22 will be out by Wednesday. So,
I mean, he caught it. He got past the 50. And it's, you know, Roadrunner, beep, beep, bye-bye, see ya, touchdown. I mean, there was no chance that guy was running him down.
He'll make the first guy miss if there is a guy there. But you just give him the football out in space like that. I mean, just a yak monster. And the thing is, too, is he can go vertical. He's not just a crossing guy. Now, it seems like most of his long touchdowns seem to be off that shallow cross. Right, off those shallow crosses, but man.
How about the first down he got? You know, 3rd and 16, he catches it 2 yards past the line of scrimmage. There's like no way he's getting the first down. He doesn't even head upfield for a good 5 or 6 strides across, and then he curls around, and I don't know who put the block on, the receiver that put the block right around the marker. That was a really good block there, and he snuck for 16. I mean, that was, you know, it's brilliant.
Yeah, I think that might have – was that Wheaton on that play?
I don't know who it was, but I'll go back and look at it. But it was a really good block, and it, you know, kind of – you know, the Steelers were on their own 15 with 3rd and 15, and Ben had thrown 2 bad passes. And, you know, at that point, we didn't know how things were going to unfold. And he gets them out of trouble in their own area and gets things going. And, yeah.
How do you think Landry Jones would have played in that game?
I think okay. I mean, I thought he was – I will say the play he got hurt on was a terrible decision. I mean, he's really lucky that didn't get picked, because not only did the first guy have a shot at it, the second guy had a better shot at it than the Steeler receiver.
Yeah.
He threw that right into traffic. So, you know, that was a little disconcerting. But Martavis Bryant, I mean, unbelievable catch. I mean, catching the back half of that football. I mean, he obviously ended in a fumble. He'll learn something from that ball security. But, I mean, you just can't cover both these guys.
I wrote before the game how the Steelers, and I think we talked about it too, how, you know, the Steelers were going up against a Browns defense that led the league in deep ball percentage, and how this, you know, would like to see Martavis Bryant get the deep ball back on track in this game again, you know, even minus Joe Hayden and Dante Whitner, who was out, and boy did he, you know, he really did respond. Now some people will say, well, in fact, I think there's a comment in the comment section in the post I did this morning saying Cleveland may as well have had a high school kid out there playing in the secondary in this game. Look, that's not Martavis; it's not his fault. You know, who he has to go against. You have to beat whoever you're lined up against. Bryant, in total in this game, was targeted 11 times overall, and that includes penalties. Now, 6 of those targets were deep passes, which means, obviously, 16 or more yards down the field. He caught 4 of them. On one of the other deep passes thrown his way in the second quarter, that was incomplete, as Charles Gaines was flagged for pass interference, and that play, you know, resulted in a 35-yard gain on top of it. And you know, the 32-yard touchdown obviously just blew right by him. And as you pointed out, his best catch, you know, in the game, that fingertip grab that he hauled in 35 yards down the field, he unfortunately fumbled. But, you know, finished the game, 6 catches, 178 yards. I believe that's now his career best in yardage in a single game.
I don't think it was. I think it was his career best first half, but I don't think it was career high yardage. But I'll double check while we're talking.
Okay. Well, 178 total yards in the game. That's certainly up there, that's for sure. Counting last year's playoff loss, David, he has now played in a total of 16 football games. He has registered 53 total catches for 1,050 yards and 14 touchdowns during that span. And this season he's scored in all but one game that he's played in. So the thing, you know, that we really want to see him get on track with, you know, was the deep ball. And he did that this week. So
You're correct, by the way. It is a career high. He had 143 last year and one something this year, but he only had two 100-yard games last year. And obviously there's that Bengals game where he had 109, but he had a 94-yard touchdown on that one. And then he had 143 against the Jets with the 80-yard touchdown on that one. I'm surprised he didn't have more 100-yard games, but yeah, so yes, you're correct. 178 career high and 137 in his first game this year. The other three, not more than 50. So he's, you know, it's been, I don't want to say boom or bust, but it's been a little bit boom or bust.
Now he's, in fact, his career high too, I think, is six catches in a game too, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, tied his career high. That was also, he had six against Arizona this year.
You know, he's not going to be a guy that's going to catch many more balls than that in a game, you know, moving forward in his career. But boy, he sure can, you know, he sure can do damage on the ones that he does catch. And you know, and we've seen him, you know, we saw last week against the Raiders, you know, take that screen and do something with that. I mean, he's really the only thing that we haven't seen out of him is what?
Well, we haven't seen him be a huge red zone factor, but
exactly, you know, the jump ball, you know, but you know, Plaxico really wasn't all that great percentage wise. When you go back and look at his numbers during his career. So, you know, sometimes, you know, even though Richard Mann said you like that height and you like to try to go after it, you would like to, you know, that's one area of the game that I think that we would like to see him. And he doesn't get many opportunities at it either. So, you know, we got a small sample size that we're dealing with. And, oh, boy, I mean, he did show that he could do that kind of stuff. What was it, the Ohio State game?
The bowl game, whatever it was, yeah.
We've seen him do it before. So, you know, that's
– first career fumble, by the way.
Yeah. 16 games that he's played in. And that's just, you know, he'll learn from that, as you said. So, yeah, great game from him.
What did you think of the run game? I mean, look, they did, you know, the numbers were terrible till, you know, 5 minutes to go in the third quarter, and then they got it going a little bit. Ben obviously operating mostly out of the gun. Looking back, should they have tried to run the ball a little bit more, a little earlier?
No. I mean, and that right side of the line, along with Cody Wallace, was just miserable at the start of the game.
I think pretty much through three quarters, the offensive line across the board was terrible. Terrible. Terrible.
No, I'm sorry, not the right side, the left side. Alejandro and Foster and Cody Wallace sure seemed to give up a lot of penetration there, definitely in the first half. Now, they did get things going, you know, late in the third quarter, fourth quarter type. Did D'Angelo look a little sluggish to you? Or?
You know, I don't know if it was, you know, I don't know if it, look, give the Browns some credit. They came out, it was going to say, you know, everybody said it's going to be easy to run the ball on them. They ate up the Steelers offensive line first two possessions. And they did a good job. So I'll give them some of the credit. I mean, literally you had, you know, Villanueva get beat bad. Rosie Nix gets run over on the first running play of the game after he catches the ball on the first play of the game. He got absolutely destroyed by Craig Robertson. DeCastro uncharacteristically pulled on a play and completely whiffed on a block. You saw Gilbert get beat on the right side. I mean, you can go through every guy. And you know, when Ramon committed the false start penalty, that made it the Quinella or Quintanilla. That, you know, all five guys had done something egregiously poor. The line's been pretty good all year. I don't think it's been outstanding, but it's been certainly good enough. They did a good job. Ben was, I thought, surprisingly mobile in the pocket, Dave. Being able to step up at different times and do things to get away from the rush that Ben does so well. I was, you know, you didn't, if I had told you he was injured and said, what's the problem? I don't know that you could have said, clearly it's an ankle injury. His mobility's bad, because it wasn't that noticeable to me.
No, and in defense of D'Angelo, it's kind of hard first contact in the backfield.
Yeah.
Trying to do something. Jordan Todman, 2 carries in the game.
How many did D'Angelo have? 15?
17.
17 and what, one pass reception?
He had the 2 targets, 1 reception for 15 yards.
Okay, so 18 touches for him. That seems like a good number. Obviously, P did not dress in this game, for anybody who was wondering. This will be a standard type of Heath game. You know, you're going to have those games once out of every 4, you'll have the game where he catches 10. But this is what Heath's going to be, 4 receptions, 40 yards type stuff. And that's going to be standard Heath stuff. All right, so let's go to the elephant in the room, which is the Steelers pass defense and the Steelers defensive side of the ball, because again, this is the story of the Steelers season defensively. Really good pressure. When they do that, turnovers tend to come. They weren't directly connected in this game, but they did the 2 things you want a defense to do: get pressure and get turnovers. And again, they gave up a boatload of passing yards. And, you look at the end of the day, the most important thing is points. They only give up 9 points. So you would call the result at the end of the day a success, but I think you still have to be concerned with this Steelers pass defense. We give Johnny Manziel a B or B+. Pretty good game for Johnny. Best of his career,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah, I think so. But we put that and put an asterisk by it, because it did come against the Steelers defense, right? Look, they got 6 sacks in the game. That was good. Should have been 9, probably, right?
6 sacks against a very mobile quarterback.
Right. And you hate to see the high completion rate. What did he complete? Something like 33 of 45 in the game, 372 yards. He had 160, I think, around halftime, something like that.
Yeah, I think 178. I think it was 21 of 25 at one point. I mean, and that's 21 of 25 with Will Allen dropping in, 21 to 25 with the very poor kind of first 3 or 4 dropbacks. But then after that, he was money.
Yeah, and his receivers dropped at least 2, right? Benjamin dropped 1.
Flat touchdown, right?
Right, yeah, he dropped 1 in the end zone. Seemed like there was 1 or 2 others maybe as well, too. Barnage, Steelers still have some issues with the tight end. At least they didn't let him go for a huge yardage. And here's the thing that kind of surprised me. When I went back and looked at the explosive plays, it felt like the Browns had something like 8 of them, but they only had 4.
If you made that number 15 instead of 20, do you think it's 8?
Say again?
If you look plays 15 and greater rather than 20, do you think it becomes 8? Did they have a lot of high teens yardage plays? Do you remember?
Oh, yeah. In fact, let's see here. At least 10.
At least 10. Okay, so your thought was right. I mean, a lot of plays against 7.
10 of 15 or more. They had 7 of 17 or more.
Okay, so you were on point. 10 of 15 or more, that's too many.
Yeah, in fact, if you totaled up all the
– I assume every one of those obviously was a pass play, so.
Right. They
were. Wow, that's 10 pass plays of 15 yards or more. That's the telling stat. And then that's why you felt that way. So
and to give a comparison, the Steelers had – while they had – what did they have? 6 explosive plays – the Steelers only had a total of 8 of 15 or more yards. So,
but 4 penalties of 29 yards or more. But so, yeah, you know,
141 in penalties on 4
on
plays, right?
On PI, yeah. It's always one of those things where I feel like it would be nice if they figured out a way to put that in the receivers and the quarterback stats, because
that's why they call it hidden yardage.
Yeah, exactly. I want to make the Jacoby Jones joke. His yardage is very hidden.
Yeah.
He's bringing a lot of energy.
Yeah, according to Tomlin, he's bringing a lot of energy, but yikes. Boy, they're going to have to get this straightened out.
Let's
look
at the defense. Good games. Cam?
Man, he, like I said before the game, going up against a rookie in Cameron Irvin, you would expect him to have a good game. And I thought he pushed them all over the place.
He did.
He was good. Personally. He wasn't big on the stat sheet, I don't think. Was he? Cameron Hayward in that game. Let's see here. 3 total tackles. Two for losses. Had a quarterback hit. Had a sack in there.
Jarvis?
Passing.
Yeah.
Would have liked to see him get that sack, you know, on the rush that Manziel looked like he scored on, you know.
Yeah.
For going against Joe Thomas, that's passing.
Yeah, I thought he was pretty good. Will Allen made a couple plays in the backfield and a couple hits. I thought he made some plays that stood out. I think Timmons was solid.
That was maybe Timmons' best game of the season.
Yeah, he's had 2 out of 3 good ones now. I thought he was very good against the Bengals. You know, Shazier, I don't, other guys who stood out, I don't know that, I will tell you, how about this? Antoine Blake, only 1 tackle. Antoine Blake usually leads the teams in tackles because they're throwing in front of him all day. Were his snaps up to speed? Did he play every snap?
69.
Yeah, so he was not a – I don't know if they were – you know, we don't usually see William Gay leading the tackle sheet. He was on the DBs. He had 7. They threw his way a little bit more. But, you know, he's become the Nnamdi Asamoah of the Steelers. They don't throw Will Gay's way anymore. But they did a little bit in this one. We didn't see as much of Antoine Blake.
Well, here's the thing, and Alex Cazor has wisely pointed this out. You know, he's still wearing that cast on that left hand of his. Supposedly, I think there's ligament damage in there.
Yeah, that's what they said.
And if you, it's obvious that he's playing with a broken wing. And he, I mean, go back to last year, right? I mean, he's known as a physical guy, right?
Yep.
And going back to last year. In fact, I'll have to look that up, how many tackles he missed last year. But, you know, normally a reliable tackler, that's why, you know, that's why he has value, or the coaches think he has value to him. Now, is he a guy that, regardless broken wing or not, that I've been high on? No. I mean, he is what he is. And if he does have that broken wing, it really takes away from his value. But I think it's, as Alex pointed out, I think it's noticeable when you go in to look at the tape with him that he's not wrapping up because he's trying to protect that hand. So people will say, well, if that's the case, get him out of there and get Brandon Boykin on the field, you know. But I think it keeps going back to they trust William Gay in the slot above everything else. You know, that's the trump card right there. And because of that, and because they don't view Brandon Boykin as a reliable physical player on the outside, they'd much rather send Blake out there with a damaged wing to do it. You know, and I think that's what this whole and Ross Cockrell, I don't think we've seen enough of him yet, you know, to know what he is or isn't. You know, coming up, run support, and that kind of stuff. You know,
Dave, somebody asked a question this week on Twitter, and I got to be honest with you, I hadn't noticed this. They talked about Cockrell and Blake switching sides all the time, and I tell you, I generally, you know, feel like Blake's generally on the left side. Is that what you perceive?
Yeah, most definitely. Well, I've got the stats. I can find out. Remind me that of that next show, and I'll get you the totals on that.
Yeah,
we chart all that.
Yeah, he's generally over there. So
take a guess, David, at how many. This is according to Pro Football Focus. Take a guess at how many missed tackles Antoine Blake was charged with last year in the 290 snaps that he played, including the playoff game.
Boy, 290 snaps that he played. These are not plays that he was involved in. It's just he's on the field.
On the field. 290 snaps that he's on the field for last season.
Okay, so let's say – I'm just going to tell you how I think about this so people can think along with me because they're probably guessing as well. I'm going to say that he has an opportunity to be in on the tackle 10% of the time. So that gives us kind of 30 snaps that he has a chance to make a tackle on. And I'm going to say of those – he makes the tackle you know, kind of 80 to 90% of the time. So I'm going to think this number is kind of, you know, going to be a small number, somewhere between 3 and 5.
Three. You did a good job of reverse engineering that. That's what that, where'd you go? Harvard, Yale or something?
Yeah, you both.
And here you are doing a podcast
big time.
With a guy that got a gift to a high school diploma. Think about that. You won't show up for the next show, will you?
Hold on. I'm going to go buy some rope.
674 snaps so far this year. How many missed tackles?
Okay, so if we were doing the logic the same way, basically you've slightly more than doubled the snaps, so we'd be 8 to 10, and I think we've seen that there have been more than that, so I'm going to guess 15 to 17.
17, which is, in my opinion, high for him, right?
Yeah, so, okay, I'm feeling very pleased with myself. No more math, please. Let's.
But, I mean, does the narrative fit?
It absolutely fits. Fits perfectly.
With the injured wing and all?
Yeah.
Now, still, you know.
That was the whole season and you know.
Now, still a liability at times in coverage, especially, you know, playing trail or having to play man press, a guy that is primarily a zone. I mean, he's out there because of his ability to play downhill, right?
Yeah.
And
for
but
sure.
He's playing
physical presence,
right? And, but he's playing with a damaged wing. Here's something to look for. Look for moving forward for our listeners as well too. They got the bye week now, right? Perfect time to try to get healed up and get a little bit. Let's see how he plays this first game out of the bye. You know, and see how he looks on tape too in his tackling ability. But I think that narrative fits. Now, granted, he's not going to the Pro Bowl, and nobody's going to be trying to push for him to be a starter next year. You know, but I think that fits. And for those people that are still after Brandon Boykin, like I said, I think the whole trump card in all this is just what we went over. They want William Gay in the slot in the nickel, and they want a physical presence on the outside, someone that can plays downhill better and can tackle better. And I think they still believe Blake is that guy over Boykin. Boykin is on this team in case something happens to William Gay.
Okay, so let's. I agree with what you said. Let's look at a couple snap counts, things that are interesting. Rosie Nix, 5 snaps. Took the first 2. I know that because he made the catch on the first one. He got run over on the second one. Didn't see him again. Didn't see him kind of being a lead blocker down by the goal line. A little bit surprised how few snaps he got for me.
They kind of abandoned that running game. I mean,
yeah. No, that's it. That's it. That's exactly right. Anthony Ciccolo, 22 snaps.
I was shocked. I was stunned he got any.
And me too. And so for those who want to compare the outside backers, Jarvis got 46. This is out of about 65, 67. Moats got, this is from Dave's site, Steelers Depot. Moats 33, Ciccolo 22, Bud 38. So Jones got double Ciccolo. That seems okay. I didn't notice him positively or negatively. I saw him in there. He's noticeable. Wearing that 56. I didn't
you wanted to say something else.
Oh no, well, he's a white guy with a you know, ponytail, you know, white
okay.
Sticking out the back.
Okay.
Where'd you think I was going?
Run away from that.
Robert Golden, 4 snaps. Cam Thomas, Nick, 6 snaps.
And Cam Thomas, look, I just put up a post on Steelers Depot just a few, as we started the show. We have been on Cam Thomas a lot over the last year and a half, but you got to credit him for chasing the football on that Manziel scramble, because that saved a touchdown and saved a touchdown period. Because first and goal at the 1, and the Browns went backwards from there, and then that drive ended with a Mike Mitchell interception. So kudos. Yeah. I mean, he only played six snaps. That one tackle of his will go down as a tackle in the stat book, as a tackle 11 yards downfield. It doesn't look like much, but I mean, let's give him credit where credit is due there.
I give Big Dan some credit too. He attempted to make a play 15, 18 yards downfield on a little swing pass. You know, showed some surprising agility getting down the field. So good stuff there. What'd you think of Shazier? Anything positive, negative, anything jump out? He, you know, he's always good for a splash player too.
Yeah, and you know, he plays downhill well. That's, you know, in general, had to boy, he just ran over Duke, right? I mean,
yep.
That's why Duke's not a every down back right now.
Yep. Ran him right, yeah, because ran him right over. Not as much as whoever ran over Cam Irving.
That was Cam Hayward. That's a Cam on Cam crime.
That was a camera.
I didn't have to worry about fitting that GIF underneath the size restriction. That didn't take long at all, did it?
I mean, holy cow.
You know, John, if you go back to our pregame stuff that John and Alex put together, you know, Cameron Irvin had to enter that game against the Bengals, you know, on that Thursday night game, and John made sure to pull out a GIF of that of basically the same thing, just Cameron Irvin getting trucked. And you know, that's why I said prior to this game that was definitely a matchup to watch. You know, the rookie in there, even though you'd be sandwiched in between two great players in Joe Thomas and Alex Mack, you know, you just had to feel that there were going to be opportunities where Cameron Hayward's going to have some one-on-one opportunities to him with him. And he, in my opinion, Cameron Hayward pushed him back quite a few times in that
game.
Oh
yeah, and he's also, Irvin got the holding call on Motes where, you know, the Cleveland scored. This was right after the Johnny play where, you know, kind of whoever carried the football kind of walked in around the corner, but it was a clear hold on Motes. Some, you know, really got hold of his jersey, and that started things going backwards for the Browns. He had a rough day. A couple other topics there on that side of the ball. I just to kind of reemphasize this point, Johnny Manziel played pretty well. And look, I don't know that I'd want to have Johnny Manziel be my starter or my go-to guy going forward as a guy in the future, but he can play in this league. He can be a backup in the league for a while. Now, there'll be a point where his mobility, you know, isn't there. He has no touch on his passes. He throws everything 100 miles an hour, but he's got plenty of arm. He throws really well on the run. We've seen him be bad, so, you know, this is a snapshot, and as you say, against his Steelers pass defense, but I thought he had a good game. I really did, because, you know, I think Johnny takes a lot of heat, and most of it's deserved, and most of it's brought on himself. So, you know, I'm not feeling all that sympathetic toward him. But I do think that, you know, he played well in this game.
Russell Wilson, light.
Yeah, you know, I'm, and you know this, Dave, maybe our listeners don't know this, that I'm not a big fan of Russell Wilson in terms of having him be my long-term quarterback either. And I was talking about this with somebody last night. What I think is special about Russell Wilson is how cerebral he is at a young age. But
that's the key thing.
And he's so obviously the negative of this is he's not going to grow into the game like Ben did or like most quarterbacks do. He got it at a very young age, and that's very unique. But he's going to lose his physical gifts, and I think both – you're going to see Russell Wilson not get better than he is now. I really honestly believe that. I think you'll see every one of the other guys, Bortles, Bridgewater, Derek Carr, all these guys get better as the game goes on, as they become smarter and understand the game better. Russell Wilson's got the game. And as his kind of mobility goes down, he's not going to be able to throw it from the pocket either. I'll bank on this, and this is why I've been down on the Seahawks all year. I'm just not a big buyer in Russell Wilson. I think he's a good quarterback, and he's had a really good career at a young age. But I'd put him right in the middle of the NFL's quarterbacks.
You think he hit his ceiling last year then?
I think he's at his ceiling right now, yeah. You know. He hasn't had great weapons, and I'll acknowledge that.
The thing that you worry about him with so many runs outside of the pocket is him getting tackled awkward. You know, you worry about missed games coming up soon for him because of injury. But, you know, here we are with Roethlisberger, who, you know, getting him is just part of the game. But yeah, I see where you're coming from.
And by the way, I do think he'll be in the league a long time because he's a really smart guy. And he, you know, 10 years from now, he'll be the ideal backup at age, you know, 31. You know,
right.
Mentor guys, be tutor, do everything, you know, be a coach someday, all that good stuff.
Well, here's the thing with Manziel and the Browns right now. You absolutely have to start him the rest of the way right now.
Can't understand why that's even up for debate. You're 2-8. You're not earning extra money for winning games now. You're also not going to be the head coach, so you're also not going to be the general manager. So who knows what these two guys are thinking. But you've got to play him. I don't think he's your long-term quarterback, but he's your backup quarterback at worst. It's like Landry Jones. You know, the guy has secured his spot on the roster for a while longer as the number two. And look, the Steelers may draft another quarterback next year because they don't have their third quarterback on the roster. So don't be surprised if in the fifth round or whatever, the Steelers, you know, go get a guy. But Landry Jones is going to be the backup, and Johnny Manziel's going to be on that roster next year. Now, you know, you're not going to pick up his option in year, you know, whatever, off his rookie deal. But, you know, he's going to be around a little bit longer.
Well, here's the thing, you know, like Mike Tomlin likes to keep pointing out of all the snaps that Landry Jones got during the preseason and how they helped him.
he can't stop citing that stat.
We're going to hear that for a while. I think you have to, in essence, do that with Johnny now. You have to know exactly what you have, and you have to get him as many reps as early possible from this point forward with him. Yeah, wrapping up a few more things on the defensive side of the football. Bud Dupree, would you say a better game outside of the pocket as opposed to, you know, pass rushing?
Yeah, I mean, you know, you see him in the picture. You see that he's mobile. You see that he's fast. He can get to the sideline and do that kind of stuff. So, yes, because I'll tell you, that's the only time I saw him.
Yeah, and that same with me. Stephon Tuitt,
One play early up the middle where he shot the gap, that's, you know, off memory, that stands out, but I didn't notice him a lot.
Yeah, you're glad the bye week's here for him, though, right?
Yep.
You know, if that knee is kind of affecting him. Steve McClendon, a few more snaps this week. They, you know, the Browns, you know, played enough small ball that allowed the Steelers to get get in their base a little bit more. McClendon's been solid all this year. McCullers did some nice things in this game as well, too. Special teams. Let's get to the Jacoby Jones elephant in the room to wrap this thing up.
It won't happen, but I would have cut him. I'd cut him today. He dropped a kickoff. He dropped a punt, and he let a kickoff bounce around and kind of looked at it and watched it hit the pylon. It worked out for him. It's just inexcusable stuff. He doesn't look explosive. I'm happy to have Marcus Wheaton back there returning kicks, or Jordan Todman returning kicks, and AB doing the punts. Waste of a roster spot.
Yeah, that's where I'm at on this as well, too. You know, in that last podcast, I said, what's wrong with Jordan Todman? I mean, he can give you that, you know, and more. Now, he's not going to – and look, you went all this time not living in your fears with Antonio Brown back there returning punts. You know, what's –
he's going to try to catch 80% of them anyway.
Yeah, exactly. And then, you know, Joe, just a little stuff. Fair catching at what, the 6 and the 7? That stuff drives me nuts because immediately afterwards the announcer will say, well, you know, your heel's on a 10-yard line, you know, that kind of thing. And then on the flip side, it's easy to have kind of a pent-up frustration and be critical of everything he does. He's had two now, right, that have hit inside the 10.
Yep.
That have been down inside the 10. So, you know, maybe damned if you do, damned if you don't in that situation. But, boy, you know, and like I said, not a huge Dree Archer fan, but I don't know.
Who knew we'd be pining for Dree? Yep. I'll tell you, letting the kickoff roll around was
foolish.
Foolish. That's the perfect word. Foolish. Okay, yeah.
And there's several you'd like to, and punts, several you'd like them just come up and make a run and fair catch on, right?
No doubt. Look, this is a scheme thing that we can talk about as well going forward, and I've asked Mike this before. I'm now a believer that you should have two guys back. One guy at 30 yards, 35 yards to do one of two things. Catch the really short punt. And the other thing is pick off the gunner. Because the Steelers aren't blocking gunners. They're getting down, you know, uninhibited. So I like, and then obviously if it's a guy like Ross Ventrone, you can protect against the fake and do some other things. So if I were scheming this up, I would structurally do things differently and have a guy at 30 yards. I'm tired of seeing punts bounce and roll 15 yards that, you know, seems to happen once a game. And that's big yardage.
Boy, if they need another roster spot for injury or whatnot, you have to think Jacoby Jones at the top of the list right now. I mean, you got some people might say LT Walton, but at this late in the season, you know, teams out of it, you kind of would think that teams might, you know, a la the Nick Williams and the Josh Morrow might be looking for a guy they can develop as a 3-4 defensive end. So you would think that LT Walton's safe. We know Roosevelt Nix is safe.
Oh yeah, the guys at risk would be absolutely Jacoby Jones, first, second, and third. And, you know, I would say Mike Vick, but it's not going to be Mike Vick.
The list gets real short because, you know, Chicklow's not going anywhere. You know, Dorian Grant.
Maybe Stingley. I mean, maybe he's next.
Yeah, but that's only if you can get Mike Adams, though, back, right?
Yeah, Pouncey.
Or Pouncey. So that's the only way one of those guys is gone, in my opinion.
Believe it or not, yeah, we're going to go another 2 weeks without hearing anything about Pouncey. And so, you know, we'll see. We'll just continue to guess on the state secret that is Marquise Pouncey. What an amazing day yesterday in the NFL. Amazing day. I mean, Peyton now turns out he has a tear in his foot, plantar fasciitis. Who knows how long he's going to be out. So the Steelers, you know, when they play them, you know, maybe it's going to be the Brock Osweilers when they play them. Green Bay now has gone from everybody's Super Bowl pick to, are they going to make the playoffs? Chicago thrashes St. Louis into St. Louis. Miami beats Philadelphia in Philadelphia. The Giants mismanage the clock again to lose a game they probably should have won against New England.
You knew that heart was going to get ripped out right there at the end of that game.
Yeah, I mean, Tom Coughlin. Anybody who wants to talk clock management, I'm available. That's two games now. Tom Coughlin, one, he absolutely is flat, stood at the podium and said, I completely blew this, that game in Dallas. That's two games. Tell me how many hundreds of millions of dollars that is, because, you know, that's a division that they could take, and now maybe they don't make the playoffs. How much does that cost because you didn't manage the clock right?
Yeah, and you have to think, even if they make the playoffs and go one and done, you have to worry about Coughlin's job, right?
I don't think he'll get fired. He's just got too much. He's got too much gravitas, I think, and Mara stuff. I don't think they'll ever fire him. If and when he leaves, it'll be he steps down. But maybe that's your point.
What about Minnesota taking it to Oakland?
Surprised me. I watched a good part of that. Derek Carr wasn't nearly as good. Or maybe the Vikings defense was much better than the Steelers defense. I mean, I don't know how to put it, but Adrian Peterson with the big day, things worked for the Steelers yesterday. But I've tried to drive this point home, Kansas City, pay attention. That's the team to worry about because the Steelers have lost the head-to-head there. It may very well be the Steelers and the Chiefs who come out in the wild card.
Yeah, I mean, their defense, I mean, you have to worry about their defense. You know, their offense does just enough. You know, if they got a weakness, it's definitely their offense. Let me ask you this. You know, my good old power rankings based off of the NEA stat, you know, said for the last couple weeks that Arizona Cardinals are the best team in the National Football League. You agree?
Really fun game to watch last night. I'd still take the Patriots, but that was, now with Edelman out and Deion Lewis out, I don't think both the Seahawks and the Packers are making the playoffs. And I'll say right now, there's a chance that both of them don't make the playoffs. But I don't think Seattle's getting in. And I think the Steelers have a very legit shot to go into Seattle and win.
Yeah, you worry about that rush defense of theirs, though, Seattle's. They seem like they can flip a switch and get after the quarterback. Carson Palmer liked to – you know, that offensive line sure put Carson at risk. But boy, Carson, when Carson's on, he is on for sure. They're a team that's going to – I will be surprised if Arizona's not in the NFC championship game. What about the way Baltimore lost?
I never saw the play. I heard about the face mask. Was it Pernell McPhee? He's gone.
Dumerville.
Dumerville, yeah. Dumerville with the face mask, and they hit a 53-yarder to win. Good for Jacksonville.
Denver, yikes. Well, we'll have to see. But Steelers might catch a few breaks here. You know, we talked about Andrew Luck
already.
You know
what? Denver's not back in the conversation. I mean, that we thought that division was over. Well, it's certainly not over. Maybe the Chargers aren't going to get there. But Kansas City, don't sleep on Kansas City.
Cincinnati going to take it to Houston tonight. Bad.
Double digits, yep. That's it. They put up 40.
All right. I think we're up against it now, so we better start wrapping it up. All right, folks. Hope you enjoyed the talk about the Steelers' win there. As always, you can follow me on Twitter at Steelers Depot. You can follow David Todd on Twitter at David M. Todd. You can follow the show at Terrible Podcast. Email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. If you want to donate to the show to help keep this thing going three times a week for you, go to SteelersDepot.com and hit the donate button on the upper right-hand corner of the site there. David, good show today. Remind me to answer some of those questions about snaps and Blake and all like that on Wednesday there.
As always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.